Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And now, Chapter 4. Prabhupada traveled with three disciples, Shyamasundara as his secretary, Pradyumna as his servant and Sanskrit editor, and Nandakumara as his cook. The first stop was Singapore, where, without explanation, immigration authorities refused Prabhupada entry into the country. Sympathetic Indians in Singapore had arranged for Prabhupada to lecture and had even mailed hundreds of invitations, but Srila Prabhupada, disappointed and feeling ill, had to continue the 12-hour flight to Sydney. April 1st, 1972. Prabhupada planned to stay a few days in Sydney before going on to Melbourne. Although the Krishna consciousness movement was young in Australia, Prabhupada saw positive signs. Devotees to initiate, TV and radio appearances, and an interested crowd at his morning lectures in the temple. This was only his second visit to Australia. On his first visit, almost a year ago, he had installed the deities Radha Gopinath and had prayed to them, "Now I am leaving you in the hands of the Malechas. I cannot take the responsibility. You please guide these boys and girls and give them the intelligence to worship you very nicely." Now, on returning and seeing the deities beautifully dressed and well cared for, he felt happy. After 5 busy days of preaching, he flew on to Melbourne. Upananda remembers, "In Melbourne, Prabhupada spoke at the town hall, and all the Melbourne hippies came. There was a man there called the Wizard. He used to be a professor at the university, but he resigned his post so he could carry out his shenanigans. He was very intellectual. He was dressed in a black cape and leotard, and he got up as soon as Srila Prabhupada asked for questions. He had a group of his own followers. First he spoke very respectfully. 'Excuse me, Your Divine Grace, I've been listening to your lecture, but I have one thing I would like to say in this regard. I believe that I am God. I am the center of the universe, and I will prove sometime next year that I am the center of the universe.' Prabhupada said, 'That's all right. Everybody is thinking like that. What makes you different?' Actually, the Wizard's whole game was that he wanted to be different, his dress, everything. So Prabhupada exposed this, exposed him as just another materialistic fool. Everybody started laughing and clapping." Auckland, April 14, 1972. The devotees had just opened a temple in New Zealand a few weeks before Prabhupada's arrival. Prabhupada stayed a couple of days and installed Radha Krishna deities. Burijan recalls, "Prabhupada installed large marble deities, but there was only one girl to take care of them. Prabhupada was insisting that the deities should be installed anyway and that they should be taken care of properly. He demanded that they should have many sets of clothes immediately. So some devotees built a temporary wooden altar and put up a curtain for the deities. The curtains fell down. Everything was going wrong. It was confusing, and everyone was upset. So Srila Prabhupada just took over. He said, 'Put this here, put that back up there, do this, do that.' He completely took command of the whole situation. The devotees put the curtains back, and Prabhupada said, 'Get rid of this Vyasasan.' And they took the Vyasasan out, because it was so big and the room was so small that there was no room for the people. Prabhupada just put a mat on the floor and sat down on that." Prabhupada visited for one night in Hong Kong, where he lectured at a program arranged by Burijan and his wife, Jagatarani. Burijan remembers, "We had taught the Indian children to sing the prayers to the spiritual master. So we had them sing for Prabhupada. He looked at me and he was really pleased. Then he said, 'Your wife said there are no interested people, but you have so many students here.' I said, 'You have so many students, Prabhupada.'" At the end of the lecture, Prabhupada asked if there were any questions, and a little Indian boy raised his hand and asked, "Who started the forest fire?" The boy was thinking of a forest fire mentioned in the Krishna book in Krishna's pastime, but all he said was, "Who started the forest fire?" But Prabhupada took the question in a different way, that this material world is like a blazing forest fire, just like the prayers to the spiritual master had described. So Prabhupada said, "No one started the forest fire. It starts automatically, just like in the forest, by the rubbing of two bamboos, a fire may start. But by chanting Hare Krishna, we can get out of this forest fire of material life." In Japan, the devotees lived in an old farmhouse in the hill country outside Tokyo. Srila Prabhupada stayed in a nearby hotel, installed Radha Krishna deities in the temple, and awarded sannyas to ISKCON's Tokyo's leader, Sudama. Prabhupada said he knew the pulse of his disciples. Thus he had recently sensed a tendency in his leading managers to be too absorbed in management and not enough in preaching. He had been telling his secretary that GBC men should not simply sit behind their desks and try to centralize power, but should become detached, take sannyas, and travel and preach. With this in mind, he had awarded the sannyas order to two of his GBC secretaries, Tamal Krishna and Sudama. Now he advised that they not give up their managerial burden, but follow his example of preaching and managing their GBC zones in a renounced spirit. Shyamasundara recollects, "Prabhupada's hotel room had rice paper walls and was very cold. It was like coming back into the northern climate, but without central heating. One day I came to Prabhupada's room for Mangal Aarti, and I had a blanket wrapped around me. I said, 'Are you cold, Prabhupada?' I could see he didn't like the cold, but he wasn't going to let that stop him from serving Krishna." Nanda Kumara remembers, "At the Sunday feast, there were about 30 Japanese people, mostly young, and every single one brought Prabhupada a flower, put it at his feet, and paid full dandavats. They were so respectful. Prabhupada said that it was a good sign that these boys and girls are able to honor a saintly person." Burijan recalls, "We had arranged a program in Kobe. Many Indians and Sindhis lived there. It was a long journey out of Tokyo. They put Prabhupada on the third floor of the house, and there was no elevator. Prabhupada just put his chin out and walked right up, even though it was a tremendous effort for him. The engagement was arranged in such a poor way that on the same speaking program with Prabhupada was a Mayavadi sannyasi. Prabhupada wanted to speak first, so he spoke in English. There were quite a few Indians there, about 100. Prabhupada explained very clearly and strongly that Krishna is God. Then the other sannyasi began speaking in Hindi. Prabhupada was just sitting there with his eyes closed, chanting japa. Suddenly he looked at us and said, 'Start kirtan immediately.' So we got up in the middle of the sannyasi speaking and started kirtan. Prabhupada left quickly after the kirtan. When we got back to the room with Prabhupada, he explained what had happened. He said, 'First he was preaching nicely, and then he started explaining panchopasana, about the five different features of the Absolute. And then when he said that the Supreme is ultimately impersonal, I could not tolerate it.' Prabhupada said, 'I am like a lion when I am out and a lamb when I am home.'" Prabhupada had business in Tokyo with his printer, Dai Nippon. He was greatly pleased with the faith Dai Nippon Printing Company placed in him, giving him hundreds of thousands of dollars credit just on his word. One of the Dai Nippon executives even approached him submissively, inquiring about whether his son, who had died a year and a half ago, had gone to Buddha. A young Japanese executive, who translated the older man's questions and Prabhupada's answers, explained to Prabhupada, "Since then he has been very religious." "He was the eldest son?" Prabhupada asked. 20 years old, youngest son." The two executives spoke briefly. Then the interpreter said, "He is asking how he can be relieved from such sadness when his son has died." "Oh yes," Prabhupada said. "The point is that the success of everything depends on how Krishna is satisfied. That I have explained." He related the example of Sandipani Muni, the spiritual master of Krishna and Balaram. Sandipani Muni's son had died, and he requested his two students, "My dear boys, I lost my child very young. If you kindly bring him, then I will be very much pleased." So Krishna went to the planet of Yamaraj and brought his son back. "So you try to satisfy Krishna, and you will be blessed. Your son will be blessed. You pray to Krishna, wherever your son may be, he will be happy. You believe in reincarnation, next birth?" The young man spoke to the elder executive in Japanese. The older man nodded. Prabhupada continued, "Yes, so your son, he must have taken a body somewhere. So if you pray to Krishna, your son will be happy. He will benefit." When Prabhupada's GBC secretary for the Western United States, Karandar, arrived in Tokyo to assist in dealing with the Dai Nippon Printing Company, Prabhupada talked with him about his new project in Bombay. He also wrote two letters to Giriraj, urging him to begin constructing the Bombay buildings as soon as possible. He wanted Giriraj to model the temple after Jaipur's famous Govindaji Temple, and erect beside it a modern high-rise hotel. "And then you shall have the perfect Juhu plan." Prabhupada said Hans, now Sarabhi, should finish the drawings and get the city council's approval by June so that they could begin the foundation before the monsoon. "I do not think that it is possible," Prabhupada wrote, "but if you can try for it, that will be nice." Hawaii, May 6, 1972. During Prabhupada's week-long stay in Honolulu, he installed the five deities of the Panchatattva, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, Sri Advaita, Sri Gadadhar, and Sri Srivas. He also lectured on yoga at a local yoga meditation center. During his morning walks on the beach, he spoke about the fallacies of Darwinism. Waikiki Beach, he commented, was not as beautiful as Juhu. Nanda Kumara remembers, "At that time, all the devotees in Hawaii were wearing sleeveless t-shirts and bright colors, and they had really big shikas hanging down very long." Prabhupada said, "Gaudiya Vaishnava shika is an inch and a half across, no bigger. Bigger shikas mean another sampradaya, and they have to be knotted. So I told everyone that, and they came back all bright and shiny with saffron shirts and proper shikas." Govindadasi recalls, "Prabhupada stayed at a big house on the Makapu side of Oahu, right on the ocean, a very pleasant place. In the morning, Prabhupada would walk on the beach, and when he would return from his walk, he would sit down on a wooden bench on a little rock patio. We would all sit around, and he would give a little morning lecture. Later, he would walk around and around in his room, chanting. One evening, I went in while he was chanting, and he said, 16 rounds finished today? And I said, 'Yes, Srila Prabhupada, I am on my 16th round now.' He said, 'That is good.'" Prabhupada was also thinking a lot about his Bombay center, and he asked me to do an architectural rendering of his idea for the Bombay buildings. Fortunately, an architect friend drew it up very nicely, and Prabhupada was pleased with it. Prabhupada had received a letter from a French disciple, Mandakini Devidasi, who was going to join a Russian boy in the Soviet Union. She was going there to marry him and assist him in propagating Krishna consciousness. When Prabhupada read this letter, he smiled in ecstasy. The thought of the Krishna consciousness movement increasing in Russia gave him great joy. Then he turned to Govindadasi and said, "Preach while you are young. When you are old, retire to Vrindavan and chant Hare Krishna. Therefore, these centers in India are being built. But you cannot retire unless you have preached sufficiently. The mind will agitate. If you have preached, you can retire and chant Hare Krishna. So preach as much as possible." Although sometimes Prabhupada could spend only a day or even only a moment with an individual devotee, that brief association would leave a permanent inspiration. The devotees would realize that although Prabhupada had touched them and given them guidance in a way that made these the most important moments in their lives, Prabhupada was also beyond the moment and the place that he shared with them, and was contemplating deeper issues and praying to Krishna with an intensity that they could not yet understand. Prabhupada received a letter in Hawaii from Giriraj that made him doubt his Bombay manager's abilities to deal with the clever Mr. N. Giriraj had reported matter-of-factly that he had just paid 7,500 rupees to Mr. N, and Prabhupada wrote back, "On what account is that paid?" Giriraj had intended it to be an installment toward the agreed 2 lakhs per year that they were supposed to pay Mr. N after they had received the deed. But why should they be unnecessarily paying Mr. N, since they still had no deed? Prabhupada began to worry about his Hare Krishna land. Time and time again, his thinking turned to Bombay, Vrindavan, and Mayapur. But he did not talk much about the problems. Rather, the devotees and non-devotees in each place he visited got the full blessings of his attention. While lecturing on Srimad Bhagavatam, he was in full concentration, and when he spoke privately, cultivating a guest or guiding an individual disciple, he fully gave of himself. That he took responsibility for many persons and worldwide matters, and did it all so graciously, always appearing before his devotees each morning on a walk or in the temple as fresh as a morning blooming lotus flower, was the expert nature of his devotional service to Krishna. He was open and simple, with a motive so pure that anyone could see it, and yet he was also grave beyond anyone's vision. He served Krishna simply in each time and place, whether riding the hotel elevator with his 2 disciples in Hong Kong, or curiously noting the details of Japanese culture, or walking on the beach beneath a Hawaiian sky. Los Angeles, May 18, 1972. Word had spread that Srila Prabhupada wanted GBC secretaries to get out from behind their desks and preach, and 4 American GBC men, eager to become sannyasis, were waiting when Srila Prabhupada arrived in Los Angeles. Satsvarup recalls, "Prabhupada said that because we were taking sannyas in the prime of youth, we had ample opportunity to do much more than he. He said he had taken sannyas at the fag end of life, but that a little is better than nothing. Everyone laughed at the thought that we could do more than Prabhupada. One by one we went to the Vyasasan, and Prabhupada gave us our tridandas and said, 'Now preach, preach, preach.' Immediately afterward, Prabhupada had us up in his room. We asked him if there were any special instructions. He said that there were 2 restrictions in sannyas life. One was that when meeting a rich man and seeing his opulent wealth, We must not think, "Oh, I have given up everything, but I wish I could enjoy these things." And the other restriction was that when we see a beautiful woman, we must not think, "I had a beautiful wife, and now this beautiful woman is here. I could enjoy her." In other words, do not have any regrets about having taken sannyas. Jagadish remembers, Prabhupada had all the GBC men come to Los Angeles, where some of them took sannyas, and we discussed reapportioning preaching zones. We had one special meeting with Prabhupada. All the GBC men were sitting there in the room, and Prabhupada looked us all over. He said, "Are you all convinced?" We just sat there. Nobody said anything for about 2 minutes. It was one of the heaviest moments of my life, Prabhupada challenging us. "Are you convinced? Are you sincere?" As Prabhupada spoke, his GBC disciples listened intently. "As far as I am concerned," he said, "I am convinced. Therefore, I am pushing on. It is a fact. I am pushing on because it is a fact, not fiction. That much I am personally convinced. Whenever someone says, 'You believe,' I say, 'No, I do not believe. It is fact.' So you must spread your conviction by your literature, arguments, preaching, facing opposing elements. But are you convinced? If you are not convinced, then it is not good for me. The first thing is enthusiasm. Don't be dead. You have to work more than me. Anyone who has life, he can preach." So the local president and treasurer of the temple will manage. The GBC can supervise that things are going on. But the first management is that each and every member is chanting 16 rounds and following the regulations. Otherwise, that is our spiritual strength. Now it is in your hands. That was my plan, to give it to the Americans. But you have to be spiritually strong. If superficially you want to be managers, it won't be good. And simply touring is not required. By traveling, you have to do something substantial to increase the society. At the time of Lenin, he had just a few men, and he took over the entire country. It is up to you to spread God consciousness. Don't be stagnant. Go and preach. Your duty is to inform them, "My dear American brothers, you have so much wealth and pleasure. Use it for Krishna. If not, it will be degradation." Srila Prabhupada met with many U.S. ISKCON leaders in Los Angeles and saw the wide array of Krishna-conscious activities in his Western World headquarters. He heard a new recording of Krishna bhajans, performed with guitars and other Western instruments, produced at the devotee's own Golden Avatar studio, and he approved it, saying, "This is better than George Harrison." He visited the art studio where the devotees were painting illustrations for his books, and he made suggestions. Ananga Manjari recalls, Prabhupada was going around looking at all the different temple offices. In one office, Karandar was showing Prabhupada a new computer. "Prabhupada," he said, "all we have to do is type the words Rupa Goswami, and then it will automatically write everything you have ever said or written about Rupa Goswami." Prabhupada had been looking at the computer without showing much interest. But when Karandar said the name Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada raised his eyebrows and said, "Oh, yes, everything can be used in Krishna's service." Then we walked out of that office and went to the telex machine. Prabhupada sat before it in the chair, and everyone stood around him while Karandar explained what the machine did. "It can write a message all the way to New York, and they can send a message back immediately," Srila Prabhupada. So Karandar typed on the telex machine, "Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Please respond." There was no answer. So he typed it out again, and again there was no answer. So he typed it out again, and this time he typed out, "All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is sitting right next to the telex machine. Please respond." all of a sudden the machine started typing out a reply, and Prabhupada was sitting there watching it. The type read, "Dear Srila Prabhupada, please accept our most humble obeisances at your lotus feet. We will be very eager to see your divine grace in 3 days in New York." Srila Prabhupada spoke out, "Jai Hari Bol." The message from New York was signed by many devotees, and Prabhupada just smiled and said, "This is very nice." At this time, distribution of Prabhupada's books by his disciples was taking on a new dimension in America, and Prabhupada heard the latest reports. From the beginning of his preaching in the West, he had stressed printing and distributing his books as the most important method of preaching Krishna consciousness. He said his spiritual master had told him to print and distribute books, and that he was following blindly. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati had been pleased if a disciple distributed even only a few copies of his magazine. In the beginning years of ISKCON, Srila Prabhupada had also been pleased when his disciples had distributed a few hundred copies of Back to Godhead each month. Gradually, his will for increasing the distribution of transcendental literature had manifested through certain devotees. In Los Angeles in 1968, Tamal Krishna had daily taken a large kirtan party downtown. The party, in addition to chanting and dancing, had circulated among the crowd and distributed Back to Godhead magazines, as many as 100 in a single day. When Prabhupada had heard these reports, he had felt encouraged and had asked for the devotees to increase. Prabhupada saw book distribution not only as the best method of preaching, but also as a fair means of income. In India, the brahmacharis in the traditional Gurukul system would beg from door to door, but in the West, such a practice would not be respected. Srila Prabhupada had said, "But every gentleman will give a quarter for Back to Godhead." Even as Prabhupada turned more toward India and his projects there, he continued to encourage his disciples, especially in the West, to distribute his books. He urged, "Please increase your program of distribution to the public, as well as trying to place our books and magazines in the libraries. I am simply interested in the book distribution." To the devotees in New York, he had written in 1971, quote, "I am especially pleased to hear that your distribution of books and magazines has increased. Go on in this way, increasing more and more. Each time someone reads some solid information about Krishna, his life becomes changed in some way. These literatures are the solid ground upon which our preaching stands, so I want that they should be available to everyone, as many as possible. So please try for this." Unquote. To the devotees in Australia, he wrote, quote, "The best news is that you are increasing nicely the distribution of my books and literature. This is the best activity, to distribute solid information about Krishna. Our preaching stands solid on these books. No other movement has such vast background of authority." Unquote. And to the devotees of Africa, Prabhupada wrote, quote, Distribution of books and magazines is our most important activity. Without books, our preaching has no solid basis. Especially the Africans want our books. Unquote. Srila Prabhupada said that if there were ample books, then everything else in ISKCON would succeed. He remarked, quote, practically, our society is built on books. One book is not very impressive. Still, a blind uncle is better than no uncle at all. So it is very nice that one book has appeared and that BTG is appearing at least several issues in other languages. But now try to produce at least 4 or 5 new books per year in several languages, plus regularly BTG every month. Apply yourself fully to this very great responsibility of producing numerous books in foreign languages. Unquote. Back in 1968, when 10,000 copies of Teachings of Lord Chaitanya had arrived at the temple in New York, Brahmananda Swami had wondered how they would ever distribute so many hardbound books on the lofty philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. But in 1970, with the publication of another book, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, some of the devotees in San Francisco had begun to go door to door, person to person, and sell the books. And not only 1 or 2 books, but 20, 30, even 40 a day. The enthusiasm had spread as devotees in other temples had begun to sell increasing numbers of Srila Prabhupada's books. Next, the young men had begun traveling in vans, going out all day, day after day, to discover the greatest ecstasy of distributing Prabhupada's books. Then a competition had started. Keshava's boasts that the devotees in San Francisco were the best had drawn challenges from the devotees in Los Angeles, New York, Denver, and Dallas. A Sankirtan fever had begun. And at the center was Srila Prabhupada, assuring that unquestionably book distribution had the topmost priority of all his missionary activities. Prabhupada also stressed that all the devotees should regularly study his books. The books were not only for the public. The devotees must read them and know them, or else how could they preach? In the Los Angeles temple room, Prabhupada would have the devotees take part in pronouncing and chanting responsively the daily Sanskrit verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Then individual devotees would take turns chanting the verse alone, while the other devotees would again respond collectively. Ridayananda Goswami remembers, when Prabhupada came to Los Angeles in 1972, he started the Bhagavatam class where everyone chanted the Sanskrit. One effect was that devotees became more grave, a little more civilized. Just at that time, things were a little wild in America. The Sankirtan parties were doing so many wild things, staying out all hours of the night, sleeping anywhere, eating anything. Previously, the temples had been a little sedate and actually even a little dry because the devotees weren't giving out many books. And then, when the Sankirtan got a little heavy, it was almost like a rodeo consciousness, this wild Sankirtan, like bronco busting. But Prabhupada came and introduced the chanting of Sanskrit mantras word for word, and the devotees submitted to a more grave and formal program. On the 1st of June, Srila Prabhupada left Los Angeles for Mexico City. He said he would return in a few weeks. Prabhupada conducted an intensive 3-day lecture campaign in Mexico City, speaking at the National University of Mexico, the Masonic Lodge, and the Theosophical Society, and appearing on a television show with some 30 million viewers. He also held initiations at the temple on 2 consecutive days. Mexico was similar to India, he said, with pious people and a tropical climate. Even when he walked early in the morning, in Chapultepec Park, many people followed him back to the temple. They recognized him as a saint and wanted his benediction. Chitsukananda recalls, "On Sunday afternoon, there were more than 500 people in the temple room. After the lecture, Srila Prabhupada went back to his room alone, and there was a big kirtan with 500 to 600 people chanting, 'Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada.' They became very, very ecstatic, and it seemed like the temple walls were going to come down. I was in Srila Prabhupada's room, and he said, 'What is this, kirtan? They are making so much noise.' I said, 'They are chanting your name.' And I went down to see what was going on. And all the people were waiting to come into Prabhupada's room. It was like they wanted to charge up to Prabhupada's room to be able to see him. They kept yelling his name, 'Prabhupada, Prabhupada.' So I came up to Srila Prabhupada, 'Prabhupada, they want to see you.' And Srila Prabhupada said, 'Well, let them come.' So I immediately arranged that people could come in. He had two doors in his room, and they were coming in through one door on the left side and leaving through the door on the right. One by one, in a line, they just filtered through like a great parade, coming and offering different words to Srila Prabhupada. Most of the people were saying in Spanish, 'Your divine grace, your holiness, please bless me. Give me your benediction.' Everyone was praying for his benediction. And as the people would come in, they would bow down. Everyone was extremely submissive, and there were many people with tears in their eyes to see the great saint Srila Prabhupada. And they said to Srila Prabhupada, 'Please give me your blessings.' Prabhupada asked me, 'What are they saying?' And I said, 'Give me one blessing, one benediction.' So he had his hand in his bead bag, and with his finger outside his bead bag, he would point to them and say, 'Hare Krishna.' And they were all very happy." Prabhupada also traveled to Cuernavaca, where he lectured out of doors at the city plaza before a crowd of thousands. The audience sat patiently and heard his words translated into Spanish. Chitsukananda remembers, "Just then we had turned out our first book, La Conciencia de Krishna es el Sistema Más Elevado de Yoga, or Krishna Consciousness, the Topmost Yoga System." Srila Prabhupada, during his lecture at the plaza at Cuernavaca, saw Haihaya Das arrive with newly printed copies of this red book. Srila Prabhupada looked at him and was very happy to see his book printed. He stopped his lecture and said, "Now you can all take one of these books and read them." And the people actually came up to Srila Prabhupada to get the books. "We only brought about 50 copies, but all 50 copies Srila Prabhupada sold personally. The people took the liberty to ask Srila Prabhupada for an autographed book, and he autographed almost all 50 copies." After the plaza lecture, there was a hotel lecture, and then Srila Prabhupada was supposed to go to a devotee's home in Cuernavaca to take prasadam and rest. But Srila Prabhupada decided he wanted to return to the temple in Mexico City. He got back around 8 p.m., so from 8 in the morning until 8 that night, he had not taken a bite of food, only a little water. We offered him fruit and things, but he didn't want anything. When he returned to his room, his eyes were shining and his smile was broad, and he said, "This is the way to be happy. Work all day for Krishna." All he wanted was a cup of hot milk with puris and a cup of sugar. He pressed the puris into the sugar, and he drank the milk with great joy and happiness. He said, "This is our life, to serve Krishna. Work all day for Krishna and take a little prasadam at night." On returning to Los Angeles, Prabhupada was again the center of the burgeoning Krishna conscious activities there. But again his thoughts turned to Bombay, and he telegrammed Giriraj, instructing him to settle the conveyance immediately. Giriraj, after receiving Prabhupada's cable, went to Mr. N, only to learn of a further complication. After Prabhupada had signed the sales agreement, the Indian government had passed a law obliging Mr. N to pay a 5 lakh gains tax upon executing the conveyance. Mr. N didn't have 5 lakhs at present and told Giriraj that ISKCON should pay it, and he would apply it toward the mortgage. But Bombay ISKCON didn't have 5 lakhs either, so Mr. N suggested Giriraj take a bank loan or secure funds from ISKCON temples in the United States. He promised that in the meantime, he would not sell the land to anyone else. Giriraj tried to get a loan from the bank, but he had no security or credit. He turned to some of the life members for help to see if they could act as guarantors for a loan. But although sympathetic, they could not help him raise the money. Giriraj also began to doubt Mr. N's word. Although naive about legal matters, Giriraj was becoming suspicious of Mr. N's character and of his dealings. Talking with life members, Giriraj learned that actually Mr. N was notorious for illegal business tactics. When previously Mr. N had signed an agreement with the Sea Company for the very same land he was now selling to Prabhupada, the sales agreement had eventually been cancelled because the Sea Company had not gotten permission from the municipality for subdividing plots of land, and one of the conditions of Mr. N's sale of the land had been that the Sea Company get government permission to use the land. According to some of the businessmen with whom Giriraj spoke, Mr. N, through his political connections, had influenced the government against the Sea Company. Mr. N had seemed very helpful, giving the devotees a good price for the land, and even providing workers for clearing it. And Mrs. N had often attended Prabhupada's classes. But there also seemed to be many contradictions in Mr. N's behavior. Hearing of these problems by mail, Prabhupada considered them manageable. If a government tax had been imposed, then the devotees should deal with that, and also continue trying for a loan. Certainly Mr. N was tricky, but Prabhupada felt ISKCON's position was strong. Giriraj should persist without becoming confused by Mr. N. Prabhupada advised Giriraj to approach Mrs. Sumati Moraji and other supporters for financial help. He said, quote, "It is a unique temple in the world, and if you show your wonderful abilities as American and European boys and girls to manage everything superbly, she will not hesitate to entrust you in every way. Therefore, there must always be goodwill and cooperation amongst yourselves for this huge task ahead. I always think of our Juhu place, and I want that it shall be the model for all the world to emulate and respect as the perfect example of a Krishna-conscious community." Unquote. Portland, Oregon, June 8, 1972. From Los Angeles, Prabhupada went briefly to Portland, where 50 of his disciples from San Francisco, Seattle, and Vancouver, as well as Portland, had congregated to meet him. From Portland, he rode by car to Eugene, where he lectured at a large hall before an audience of mostly hippies. Every temple in the U.S. wanted Srila Prabhupada, and although Prabhupada could not visit them all, he remained open to brief visits and public lectures in faraway places. He would sometimes confide to his traveling secretary that his disciples should do this preaching. But then another lecture opportunity would arise, promoted by an enthusiastic group of devotees, and Prabhupada would surprise everyone by agreeing to go. After returning to Los Angeles for 4 days, Prabhupada then flew to New York for a week, and then on to London for 2 weeks. In London, George Harrison and Ravi Shankar visited him several times at the Bury Place Temple. When George asked if he should shave his head and try to live like the other devotees, Prabhupada replied that he should continue to be a singer. If you tell people to chant Hare Krishna, Prabhupada reminded George, they will do it. July 20th. From England, Prabhupada went to Paris, where he lectured and performed an outdoor initiation ceremony at the Luxembourg Gardens. Hundreds of people, most of them student radicals from the nearby university, gathered to watch. Srila Prabhupada began his talk saying, "You French people have a history of being revolutionary because you are looking for a better way of life." When the words were translated into French, the students cheered and applauded. Srila Prabhupada continued, "Therefore, you should inquire into this Krishna consciousness. It is a revolutionary movement for reviving our original God consciousness." About 30 devotees from Germany had come to Paris, and most of them, along with many devotees from England, Amsterdam, and Paris, received initiation that day at Luxembourg Gardens. In Paris, Prabhupada also attended a successful 4-day indoor festival where he was pleased to lecture and lead kirtans each night. July 26th. In Amsterdam, Prabhupada installed deities of Lord Jagannath, Lord Balaram, and Subhadra, and lectured at Vondel Park before thousands of hippies. One day at Vondel Park, a devotee was addressing the crowd when Prabhupada suddenly told his disciples to stop. "These people are useless," he said. "Just hold kirtan." Later he wrote to a disciple in the West, quote, "We are observing here in Europe that many, many hippies have become so disgusted with material life, but they are also now so much degraded that they will not hear our philosophy, simply mocking. So our devotees may become very much learned to remove their doubts and become very much fixed up in Krishna consciousness. But so far as preaching to the general public, especially the hippie class, it is better not to preach very much philosophy. Just somehow or other, get them to chant Hare Krishna mantra. And if some of them are curious to learn something, they may purchase one of our books. Only if they chant with us, that will help them." Unquote. July 29th. At Edinburgh, Prabhupada was greeted by almost a dozen reporters from various newspapers in Scotland. Kishora recalls, "Edinburgh is a stuffy, puffed-up, tradition-steeped place, but Prabhupada was very cordial and humble with the reporters. He was giving them so much credit about how nice the country was, and how nice Edinburgh was, what nice buildings we have here. And he was saying, 'You have 2 colleges here?' 'Yes, yes, we have 2. Very proud they were. "So you have many students here?" "Yes, yes." "It's a very affluent city, Edinburgh?" "Yes, oh yes, very rich and opulent." And then Prabhupada said, "So you have so many students, and you have so many nice big, big buildings. You have so much facility for enjoyment." And they were agreeing, "Yes, yes, we have all this." And Prabhupada just looked at them straight and said, "Then why are your universities producing hippies?" They looked at one another, and no one could answer. And Prabhupada began to explain how society cannot bring happiness or contentment simply with buildings. "Stones and windows," he said, "where is the happiness there?" In Glasgow, Prabhupada lectured at Woodside Hall before an audience of almost 1,000. Kishora remembers, "Prabhupada was sitting on stage on his Vyasasan. The crowd was very large, and even the balcony was overflowing. When Prabhupada arrived, the students greeted him like a pop star. They were cheering and whistling. Prabhupada immediately began lecturing very heavily on the basic science of Bhagavad Gita, how Arjuna became a successful devotee by killing all his friends and relatives. At the end of the lecture, I was a little apprehensive as to whether the people would accept the heavy lecture or not, but they cheered and applauded. When it came to question and answer time, one man came all the way down the aisle from the back of the hall and stood at the foot of the stage and looked up at Prabhupada. For several moments he spoke, on and on and on, talking very proudly, "I am this, I am that," and then concluding, "I am God." That was the conclusion of his little monologue. The whole crowd was hushed, and I thought, what's going to happen now? Prabhupada simply looked down and let the silence continue for a few moments more. Then Prabhupada spoke, "So you are God, you have nothing more to say? You are not God, you are dog." And immediately the crowd stood up and applauded and cheered. The man just looked at Prabhupada, and a smile came on his face. With just those few words, he had been defeated. He simply walked all the way back again to the back of the hall and was finished. It was ecstatic, because the crowd was participating in the whole thing. They all realized that God is not cheap. Then we had kirtan, and everyone in the audience was dancing. At that time, they had gotten a bit lax at the door, and the local street urchins from this low-class area of Glasgow came into the hall, and they all began dancing and singing. Some of them tried to get up on the stage. Prabhupada was also chanting, and so these kids were all trying to get around him and get on the stage to chant. The devotees started to push these dirty little children off the stage, but Prabhupada said, "Don't do that. These children are all devotees. Let them chant." When Prabhupada finally got up to leave again, he reminded me of some big celebrity. He was smiling and waving and walking off the stage, and the audience were all shouting, "No, no, no." They began chanting, "More, more, more, more." August 1st. When Prabhupada returned to London and heard that Sumati Murarji was arriving there, he went with a group of his disciples to meet her at the airport. He talked with her about his plans for Hare Krishna Land at Juhu, and of his desire to form a board of trustees consisting of ISKCON's Bombay Life members. Sumati Murarji agreed to be president of the board, which would meet regularly and give advice for managing ISKCON's Bombay project. Each trustee would also contribute a large sum of money toward developing a particular area of the project. Prabhupada asked Mrs. Murarji to donate for the temple. He would request Mr. Khandelwal to donate for the library, and Mr. N for the two other wings. That Mr. N had not yet produced the deed, however, continued to weigh heavily on Prabhupada's mind, and he questioned Mr. N's intentions and Giriraj's competence. If the only obstacle was the 5 lakh tax, then Prabhupada had already instructed Giriraj to approach ISKCON's wealthy friends and secure a loan. What was the difficulty? But Giriraj's communications sounded as if such a solution was impossible. On August 27th, Prabhupada telegrammed Giriraj, quote, "Has conveyance deed been signed? If not, finish immediately and wire details," unquote. Again, Giriraj went to Mr. N, although anticipating Mr. N's reply. This time, however, Mr. N added yet another complication, reminding Giriraj that ISKCON had not yet obtained permission from the charity commissioner. ISKCON was a public charitable trust, and so required permission from the charity commissioner before acquiring property. Mr. N put the burden back onto ISKCON. At the charity commissioner's office, Giriraj learned that he should have applied for permission 6 months prior to signing the agreement for the land. To Giriraj and the other devotees in Bombay, the affair had become a huge Gordian knot. Oh, New Vrindavan, West Virginia, August 30th, 1972. Only 2 days remained until the Janmashtami celebration, and more than 300 disciples had gathered to be with Srila Prabhupada. Janmashtami, Krishna's appearance day, is always followed immediately by Srila Prabhupada's appearance day, and this year, with so many devotees gathered in a holy place with Prabhupada, the occasion promised to be especially auspicious. Prabhupada had agreed to lecture every evening in an outdoor pavilion, constructed for the occasion atop one of New Vrindavan's many hills. The lecture series was titled Bhagavad Dharma Discourses, and through these meetings, Prabhupada set an example for his disciples that they hold similar festivals in other parts of the country. Through Bhagavad Dharma discourses and book distribution, the Krishna consciousness movement would increase its purifying influence throughout the world. Prabhupada lived during these days in a small wood frame house in the New Vrindavan woods. He regularly received visitors and lectured in the evening. Each evening, before his lecture at the pavilion, the devotees would hold the kirtan and carry Prabhupada up the long, steep hill on a palanquin. And afterward, as they carried him back down, he would be surrounded by chanting disciples bearing lanterns and torches. Sureshvar recalls, "The path from the pavilion wound down and around on its way to the temple. I got there at dusk and beheld Srila Prabhupada floating jubilantly in his palanquin atop a sea of devotees. There were hundreds of devotees with tumultuous kirtan and roaring, plus dust was being kicked up everywhere from all the people. It looked spectacular, like a panoramic scene from one of those epic movies, The Ten Commandments or Exodus, only much more because it was transcendental. I just fell down in the dust as Prabhupada's palanquin came gliding past. It was very wild, but devotional." Bhatu Gopal remembers, "It was a small palanquin carried by 4 men. There were some ropes for Prabhu, and it wasn't a very comfortable ride for him. But it was an amazing scene. Devotees with torches, electric torches, and fire torches, and lanterns, and Prabhupada coming down in his palanquin, down the trail. Hundreds of devotees were surrounding him. Kirtan was roaring. I kept trying to get close to Prabhupada and get a glance." Janavadevi Dasi recollects, "We were running down the steep hill in the dark amid the loud chanting of a river of devotees, and our feet seemed to never touch the ground. About halfway down, I caught up to the palanquin. But then I realized that being close to Srila Prabhupada meant far more than physical proximity, and that I needed to become much more serious about Krishna consciousness in order to feel less distant from him." On Janmashtami night, Prabhupada went to the temple and listened to readings from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, about Lord Krishna's birth. Around 2 a.m., he noticed many devotees were nodding. "You are getting tired," he said, smiling, and he ended the program. Even in the midst of such a large festival, Prabhupada was again plunged into the struggle over the Bombay land. A letter arrived from Giriraj explaining his failure to secure the 5 lakhs loan government and the government's refusal to grant permission. He also mentioned his suspicion that Mr. N was influencing the charity commissioner's decision. Prabhupada had a copy of the purchase agreement with him, and he studied it carefully. Again, he concluded that his position was strong, since he was occupying the land according to the terms of the agreement. He had paid 2 lakhs as promised, but Mr. N had not turned over the deed. Now more money was being demanded, and Prabhupada had said Giriraj should pay this money and get the deed. As for the permission from the government charity commissioner, there was no mention of it in the agreement. Although Mr. N's tactics were apparently bewildering Giriraj, Prabhupada saw them as only empty bluffs. he telegrammed Giriraj, quote, "Take bank mortgage, pay off N," unquote. Before receiving any reply from Giriraj, Prabhupada sent another telegram, quote, "Why do you say conveyance impossible? Everything clear in agreement of purchase. Conveyance to be executed immediately according to terms of agreement of purchase," unquote. On Srila Prabhupada's appearance day morning, he went up the hill to the pavilion to speak. It was a beautiful late summer's day, and he sat on the stage on a red vyasasan beside the deities of Radha Damodar and Lord Jagannath. In addition to hundreds of his disciples, hundreds of guests were also present, the entire audience numbering about 1,000. The festival was a newsworthy turnout of the Hare Krishna movement, and reporters from the New York Times and other newspapers were on hand, along with television film crews. Prabhupada spoke, explaining how, although an observer might misunderstand the devotee's worship of their spiritual master, no one should think that the spiritual master was presenting himself as God. Prabhupada compared the spiritual master to a tax collector. As the tax collector collects money only on behalf of the king, so the spiritual master receives honor, but on behalf of Lord Krishna. Everyone should serve and bow down to the Supreme Lord, and the spiritual master comes and collects obeisances and worship on behalf of God, who accepts any sincere worship of the spiritual master as an offering to himself. Prabhupada ended his lecture, and a great feast climaxed the day and a half of fasting. Prabhupada then returned to the backyard of his little house, where he talked with some of the devotees. Ridhananda Goswami recalls, Prabhupada was taking his massage, sitting on a straw mat outside his cabin. Suddenly, two little kittens appeared by his mat, and they were rolling around, tumbling. They were wrestling, tumbling, rolling around and around. Immediately I thought, oh, they are contaminated. I have to get them away. The cats actually tumbled right onto Prabhupada's mat. They rolled in a little furry ball right over to Prabhupada's feet. Prabhupada began tickling them under their chins. He was laughing, rubbing under their chins. Then he turned to me, sort of in a very jolly mood, and said, "Just see, even here there is love." Shruta Kirti remembers, "I was in charge of the kitchen, so I was too busy to see Prabhupada at all. He was there for a week, and practically the whole time I didn't get to see him. I was so upset. I was doing all this service, and I had no opportunity to see Prabhupada, always cooking until midnight. I felt so bad." So the day before Prabhupada left, Kirtanananda Maharaj came up to me and said, "So you are going to be Prabhupada's servant?" I said, "Oh no, this is wonderful." "No, this is terrible." I was so worried. Then he said, "You'll be leaving tomorrow morning to go to Pittsburgh." I thought, wow, that was quick. I didn't know anything about it. The following morning, Kirtanananda Maharaj brought me over to the farmhouse Prabhupada was staying at. He took me into Prabhupada's room and said, "This is Shruta Kirti. He is going to be your servant." Prabhupada looked, and I paid my obeisances. Kirtanananda Maharaj said, "He cooks very well, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada said, "That's very good." "But he hasn't massaged," Maharaj said. "I had never done it before in my life." And then Prabhupada said, "That's all right. Anybody can massage. It is very easy." Satya Narayan remembers, "I was with a group of devotees. We would travel around the country in an old bus preaching. On the bus we had deities, a kitchen, and a shower. Prabhupada was outside of his cabin when we drove up in the bus. When he came on, we received him just as in a regular temple, and we gave him Charanamrita. He looked at everything and said that there should be hundreds of buses like this. It wasn't such a big event for him, but he really liked it." Satsvarup Das Goswami recollects, "I saw different leading devotees go down to that house to see Srila Prabhupada on important business. I had no important business that hadn't been answered by him in letters, but I began to feel anxious that I was not going to him while others were. Finally, one day my anxiety grew so great that I decided I would go and see his divine grace. When I arrived at the door of the house, Prabhupada's servant gladly let me in, and in a moment I was seated before Srila Prabhupada. He was seated to take his massage. I expressed to Srila Prabhupada that I had no very urgent questions to ask him in particular, but that I had become anxious to see him, and so I had come. Prabhupada replied that I should know better than to come to him out of such anxiety. He said he had already answered everything in his books. Actually, this was very inspiring. On the one hand, he was telling me that as an older devotee, I should be assured that by studying his books, everything was there. Not that out of anxiety I should feel a lacking, and on an impulse have to personally see my guru. But now, since I was in his presence, Srila Prabhupada asked me, 'What are you doing?' When Srila Prabhupada said that, I got the strong impression that he was regarding me in the proper place as a tiny fool. Here I had just been initiated sannyas, and I was coming before Prabhupada with my assistant and asking for his attention. Now that I had asked for his attention, he gave me a surveillance glance, and by his question he seemed to imply that I was doing nothing or very, very little to spread Krishna consciousness. That was how I interpreted his question, 'What are you doing?' I replied that I was, according to the instruction that I had received from him in a letter, going from temple to temple in my zone and implementing his desire that the students there study the Srimad Bhagavatam in the morning class. I had previously felt very confident that I was exactly following direct orders I had been given in a letter from him. But to my surprise, in that room in New Vrindavan, he began to tell me that visiting temples was not the most important thing. He said that he was pleased with the program of Vishnu Jan Maharaj, who was traveling on a bus. He said I should do like that. I immediately replied, 'Then your instruction that I should go to the different temples is not very important? I should take a bus?' And Srila Prabhupada became annoyed and said, 'It is not that because one thing is more important, the other thing is less important. Everything is important. Not that just because I say this is important, to travel in a bus, now you say traveling to the temples is not important. Krishna's head is important, and Krishna's foot is important. Everything about him is important.'" While Prabhupada participated fully, both formally and informally, at New Vrindavan, he still carried a special burden of concern for Bombay. Although he had appointed GBC secretaries to oversee the Krishna consciousness movement in various parts of the world, he was the real GBC secretary of India. Wherever he traveled, therefore, he remained partial to those projects. He was setting the perfect example of a GBC secretary. While conscientiously tending to practical affairs, he remained always transcendental, fully dependent on Krishna, and always preaching. After drafting a telegram to Giriraj, or hearing of difficulties in Bombay, he would immediately return to his peaceful routine and active preaching. He would take his late morning massage, bathe, put on tilak methodically and delicately, say his Gayatri mantra with silent composure, take his prasadam, rest for an hour, and in the evening, after a full day's activities, go into the temple room of whatever temple he happened to be in, sit on the Vyasasan, and chant Jaya Radha Madhava, and speak pure Krishna consciousness. September 8th. After New Vrindavan, Prabhupada went to Pittsburgh, where he attended a successful engagement at a large hall, the Syria Mosque. He also met with a Catholic bishop, whom he asked, "Why do the Christians kill cows in slaughterhouses and thus break the commandment, Thou shalt not kill?" Prabhupada had often asked this question of Christian priests and was always unsatisfied with the answer. This was no exception. In an informal gathering in his room, Prabhupada stressed outgoing preaching programs, and he advised his newly initiated sannyasis present to follow the example of their godbrother, Vishnujan Swami, to travel in a bus from town to town and hold festivals and distribute books and magazines. September 9th. The devotees in Dallas had purchased a large church facility and were forming the first ISKCON children's school known as Gurukula. Prabhupada, while traveling in India during 1971 and 1972, had sent a series of letters to the Dallas teachers explaining the basic direction he wanted them to take for beginning a Krishna-conscious primary school. He said, quote, "We will teach the basic requirements of reading and writing, but also give them real spiritual knowledge on how to live perfectly. What other school of learning offers such a wonderful educational opportunity? Last night, the topic of my lecture at our Delhi Pandal was the necessity for teaching Krishna consciousness in all our schools and colleges. This is a revolutionary thought. But we have seen that the practical outcome of so much godless education in technology and science is that they are producing only hippies one after another. What is the use of their skyscraper buildings if their sons will not maintain them? The old system of Gurukul should be revived as the perfect example of a system designed to produce great men, sober and responsible leaders who know what is the real welfare of the citizens. Just as in former days, all big personalities were trained in this way. Now you have got the responsibility to inject this idea in your country. Please do it with a cool head, and very soon we shall see the practical benefit for your countrymen." Unquote. These letters had assured the Dallas devotees that they were doing the most important work for the pleasure of Srila Prabhupada. The school had gained support from other ISKCON members, and many parents had sent their children. By the time of Srila Prabhupada's visit, about 50 students were enrolled. Prabhupada said Dallas's weather reminded him of Calcutta, even though he felt uncomfortably hot. Disdaining the use of air conditioning, he shed his kurta and sat on the lawn with his inexperienced but eager group of teachers. The best system of education, he said, was as he had known as a child. One teacher in a room with up to 50 students of various ages and aptitudes. One at a time, the students would come to the teacher's desk, receive guidance and a further assignment, and then return to work. The Gurukul teachers were particularly concerned and puzzled about how to discipline children without being punitive, and Prabhupada unhesitatingly solved all their puzzles. He said the students should both fear and love their teachers. The teacher, by stern countenance, may threaten an unruly child and make him submit, but the teacher should not hit the child. The next day, Srila Prabhupada went into a classroom and sat on a cushion before the class. Holding a blackboard pointer in each hand, he joked that one stick could be used for hitting the students' heads and the other for hitting their hands. The children and teachers became delighted to see Prabhupada's playful mood. And when he asked if anyone wanted to get hit, both teachers and students moved forward, holding their hands out for a merciful slap from Prabhupada. To demonstrate how to teach, Prabhupada called for a volunteer. Dvarkadish came forward. Prabhupada, placing his venerable hand over the boys, guided him repeatedly in forming the first letter of the Sanskrit alphabet. News of Bombay followed Prabhupada to Dallas. A devotee who had recently come to the West from Bombay informed Prabhupada of Giriraj's recent talk of resigning as president of the center. Depressed by his ineffectiveness in dealing with Mr. N, the lawyers, and the government, and harassed by bickering and uncooperative devotees, he was considering himself unworthy to keep the charge. Now Giriraj's anxiety became Prabhupada's, as again he concerned himself with all the affairs of his Juhu project. There seemed to be no one he could discuss this with, since the devotees in America knew almost nothing of matters in Bombay. The night was too hot for sleeping, and Prabhupada could not concentrate on translating Srimad Bhagavatam. So he stayed up late, talking with his secretary about Bombay. Surmising the mind and mood of Mr. N, and expressing his concern for his Hare Krishna land and his wonder at the devotees' hesitation and disheartenment, he turned the argument this way and that, considering it in different lights, until in the early morning he finally put it aside. Afterward, he composed another telegram, quote, "Settle land immediately at best price possible. N promised to pay it. If he won't, we can pay. Suggest 15,000. Don't change presidency until I come." Unquote. Large marble deities of Radha and Krishna arrived in Dallas by trailer from New York. Prabhupada had specifically selected these deities for Dallas Gurukul while in India and ordered them to be shipped to the United States. The Krishna deity was magnificent. He was tall, bigger than most ISKCON deities, and his limbs and head were strikingly large. According to one story, the deity was several hundred years old and therefore carved according to an ancient tradition. Even though the devotees in Dallas were unprepared to install Radha Krishna deities, Prabhupada told them to get ready in 2 days for the installation, which he would personally perform. Janava Devi Dasi, however, unauthorizedly removed the original paint from the deities and began to repaint them. When Prabhupada heard this, he became furious. He called the Dallas president, Satsvarup Das Goswami, to his room and demanded an explanation. Satsvarup said that he was a fool, but that Janava had also acted without his permission. Prabhupada then called for Janava and yelled at her furiously. She began to cry. "Why have you done this?" Srila Prabhupada demanded. "Nonsense," was her choked reply. "Nonsense," Srila Prabhupada affirmed. "Suicidal nonsense. You are a nonsense, and you will always remain a nonsense. So, what are you going to do about this?" "Well, Srila Prabhupada," Janava replied weakly, "I called up Bardraj in Los Angeles, and he said if I use a certain kind of paint..." "Bardraj," Prabhupada yelled, "who is Bardraj? I am your spiritual master, and I am sitting before you. Why do you not ask me?" Disgusted, he then turned to the others in the room. "So, what is to be done about this?" One of the ladies said that with a quick drying paint, they could repaint the deities just as before in time for the installation. "Yes," Srila Prabhupada said, Do it immediately. Janava stayed up all night, carefully repainting the deities as before. Early the next morning, which was to be the morning of the deity installation, Krishna looked very beautiful, although his body was tacky in spots from the fresh paint. During that morning's walk around White Rock Lake, while talking philosophically about various topics, Prabhupada turned casually to Satsvarup Maharaj and asked about the preparations for the installation. When Satsvarup said he was uncertain whether Krishna's paint would be dry enough, Prabhupada suddenly stopped. If the deities weren't ready, he said, there was no use in his staying any longer in Dallas. Turning to his secretary, he told him to change their flight reservations as soon as possible. Satsvarup begged forgiveness and said that maybe everything could still be done on schedule. Prabhupada's angry mood changed, and he continued walking, talking about other matters. Later in his room, Prabhupada talked alone to Satsvarup, continuing on the point of his morning lecture about materialistic life. In a casual way, as most people would talk about ordinary things, Prabhupada spoke of the foolishness of the conditioned souls. They think that just by having a big family and being absorbed in mundane activities, they do not have to concern themselves with death or with the next life. As Prabhupada spoke, he shook his head in disbelief, considering the incredulous position of the materialist. All of Prabhupada's disciples noted the same amazing thing about him. Wherever he went, his consciousness was always in transcendence. Whether staying up late worrying and talking about Bombay, or criticizing devotees for repainting the deity, his mind was ever moving from one Krishna-conscious consideration to another. The devotees with him would sometimes observe his awesome Krishna-consciousness from a respectful distance. At other times they might, in the name of service, speak up and become more personally involved. Or they might find themselves thrust under the direct scrutiny of his demanding attention. No one could presume or accurately predict in what way Prabhupada would act in his constant grave service to his spiritual master. While sitting with Satsvarup Maharaj, Prabhupada began humming and singing a Sanskrit phrase from the morning's Bhagavatam class, Greshu Gra Medinam. Then he asked, "So how is the deity?" Satsvarup said he thought he was dry. Prabhupada stood and walked into the room where Janava was examining the repainted deity. Calmly he stood before Radha and Krishna, singing to himself. "Yes," he said, "now it's all right." Later that morning in the temple room, Prabhupada sat on his Vyasasan and installed Radha and Krishna, reciting the prayers from the Brahma Samhita. He then offered the first aarti to the deities, who had been hastily dressed and placed on an almost bare altar. Prabhupada seemed pleased, however, and later went up to his room and wrote on a piece of paper, Radha Kalachandaji, the deity of Dallas, September 12th, 1972, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Kalachandaji, he said, meant black moon. Prabhupada was preparing to return soon to India via a western route, and he paid another visit to his Western World headquarters in Los Angeles. On the very day he arrived, however, he wrote more directions to the devotees in Bombay, reassuring them the Juhu land was not just a trouble spot, but a special place where a great plan would be carried out. It was worth fighting for. He said, quote, "Now I am anxious to hear if the conveyance deed has been signed, and what are the contents. Kindly send me the copy duly signed as quickly as possible. This will give me great relief. As soon as the conveyance has been signed, you may begin the building work immediately. I am coming to India soon, at least by October, and I want to see that the building projects in Bombay, Mayapur, and Vrindavan are going on nicely. This Bombay project is one of our most important projects in the whole world, and I am looking to you and the others there in Bombay to see that it is done very magnificently." Unquote. Prabhupada's secretary had recently shown him a new advertisement booklet printed by Air India, in which the art theme was exclusively dedicated to Krishna in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was encouraged to see that Air India was enticing tourists to come to India to experience Krishna culture. This confirmed his idea that in the future, Hare Krishna Land and his other Indian projects would be important showpieces for tourists wanting to experience real Vedic culture. Mail from Bombay always received first priority, and every morning Prabhupada would ask for news from Bombay, giving any letter from Giriraj immediate attention. Early in October, he received a long letter from Giriraj. It said, quote, "We just cannot control the material nature, and although everything is going on slow, Mrs. Moraji, Mr. Munam, the bank, and Mr. N. all feel that they are proceeding as quickly as possible, and they do not respond very favorably to being over-reminded by me of the urgency of the matter and of your anxiety that it be finished." Unquote. Nothing new had developed. The deed still had not been signed. Although Giriraj said he now had no intentions of resigning his post, Prabhupada, after studying the letter, concluded that other senior devotees in India should also help. He therefore wrote to Tamal Krishna Goswami and Bhavananda, both in Vrindavan, asking them to go immediately to Bombay and try to expedite the conveyance. Prabhupada was asking Tamal Krishna Goswami to revive his active status as a manager in India. He said, quote, "Giriraj is finding difficulty. From his letter I can understand. So I think you have to revive your position as GBC again and look after all the business of India affairs nicely." Unquote. Prabhupada also wrote Giriraj, informing him that other devotees were coming to help, and reminding him to also work with the Board of Trustees. He said, quote, "I cannot tax my brain so much from such distant places as to what to do if there is any difficulty. Therefore, I am relying completely on you, my trusted senior disciples, to finish up these things nicely." Unquote. Prabhupada repeatedly instructed the managers in Bombay not to deviate from the terms of the purchase agreement. He was willing, as a matter of concession, to pay the 5 lakhs to be deducted from the total price. But no more changes. The devotees should press Mr. N. to the original agreement. Prabhupada was worried that he had not heard from his lawyer, Mr. D. 2 weeks before, he had telegrammed both Mr. N. and Mr. D. asking for reports on the delays, but he had received no replies from either of them. He had since written to another lawyer, a friend in Bombay, asking about the delay, and in Los Angeles he received the reply, quote, "Mr. D. was no longer his attorney." Unquote. A couple of days after receiving this shocking news, Prabhupada received a formal letter from the office of Mr. D. informing him of the same. Of all the recent news from Bombay, this was the most disturbing. Prabhupada began to see how Mr. N. had been devising a devious plot from the beginning. It was not just a matter of slowness or bureaucratic delay. Mr. D. had been in league with Mr. N. They were cheaters, so now it was going to be a real fight. ISKCON would have to go to court and file criminal charges against Mr. N. There was no avoiding the fight, but Prabhupada still felt that his position was legally very strong. Leaving Los Angeles, Prabhupada thought of a further tactic. He wrote to Giriraj that he should put a notice in the newspapers advising the public that ISKCON had signed an agreement for purchasing Mr. N's land in Juhu. He then traveled to Berkeley. October 6th. During his brief visit to Berkeley, Prabhupada met with a group of professors from the University of California and also installed Radha Krishna deities in the Berkeley Temple. But still he was meditating on Bombay. He wrote to Tamal Krishna Goswami saying, quote, "The Bombay dealing has been muddled by the tactics of Mr. N and Mr. D. Giriraj is in trouble. He is a child in these worldly dealings, so immediately go to help him. But you must be careful to pay the money in the court, registrar's office, and not in the hand of Mr. N or his solicitor. Settle up the things properly. Otherwise, let us go to the court for specific action, either civic or criminal, against the tactics of Mr. N." Unquote. Prabhupada decided to send Karandar, whom he considered expert, to help in Bombay. He also wanted to send Shyamasundara, but Shyamasundara had gone to London regarding a large country estate George Harrison was donating. Prabhupada notified Shyamasundara, however, that once the London transaction was completed, he should go to Bombay. Prabhupada was ready for the fight. He would not be cheated. During his return trip to India, Prabhupada again visited Hawaii. Then, on October 11th, he went for the first time to Manila, where a small number of disciples had arranged preaching programs for him, both in the temple and at the Hotel Intercontinental. In Manila, Prabhupada carefully considered his position regarding the Juhu property and concluded that he would come out victorious. He listed the points of his argument in a letter to Giriraj. They were, quote, 1. We have fulfilled all the conditions as purchaser. 2. Mr. N has purposefully delayed with a motive to cheat us, as he had done with some others in this connection. 3. But this time he cannot cheat us, because we are in possession of the land and our deity Radha Krishna is installed there. 4. Therefore, we must immediately go to the court for enforcing him to execute the conveyance immediately. 5. Even if the court case goes on for a long time, still our business there cannot be stopped. 6. Without going to the court, we cannot make any compromise with him. 7. But I think we can arrange the full amount of 14 lakhs to get this rascal out of the scene. 8. But we cannot do it without going to the court. Otherwise, we shall become a party for breaking the purchase agreement. Therefore, we have to go to the court before making any compromise. Unquote.